This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The final day of President Trump's presidency before he departs tomorrow for Mar-a-Lago. And we got a farewell video from Melania, which is your last opportunity perhaps to do a sui generis impersonation of Melania, Amy.
It has been a greatest honor of our lives.
It's not bad.
I was crying yesterday, and it was hard to sleep last night. I'm sad. I'm more upset about Melania, I think, than President Trump.
Just for the material.
Of course.
It has been the greatest honor of my life to serve as First Lady of the United States. I have been inspired by incredible Americans across our country who lift up our communities through their kindness and courage, goodness and grace. The past 4 years have been unforgettable. As Donald and I conclude our time in the White House, I think of all of the people I have taken home in my heart and their incredible stories of love, patriotism, and determination.
Take me home in your heart, too. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment, because I am going to miss her.
Yeah, maybe she'll save a seat for you on Marine 1.
Oh, please.
Or maybe she'll be on Marine 2. Who knows?
Oh, no.
Maybe they're not both going to Mar-a-Lago. But, of course, the president is the focus. And thinking about what Trump accomplished over the last 4 years, your biggest takeaway, what you think was the most important thing that Trump did, accomplishment is maybe even too specific. What is the most important thing that he did? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636DA, turnkey.pro, text line, because it's not, for me, a specific policy. As we've talked about on the show before, if you look at his policy agenda, and there are some exceptions, but it was, you know, rather a conventional center-right Republican policy agenda. It was tax relief and regulatory relief, mm-hmm. and both of those were important. I'm not discounting it. I'm just saying it wasn't paradigm shifting for the GOP. There is something about him that was.
We'll get to that.
What was it?
And I want to know, too. I mean, also, too, prison reform, the appointment of three Supreme Court justices. But those Trump supporters, are you still all in for Trump after what happened at the Capitol? Because I've heard from Trump supporters that said, I'm done now. I don't like what he did to Vice President Pence. I don't care if he runs in 4 years from now. I'm done. But also, too, I mean, I want President Trump to change his mind and go to the inauguration tomorrow. I just think that that was so important to heal our country and to show that he and Biden, or at least leave the letter that he wrote. Because remember when he received the letter from President Obama back in 4 years ago, 2017, his first day in office, and he told David Muir what a lovely letter it was.
And this was the letter given to me by President Obama.
We saw that image of him the final morning that he was here, putting the letter on the desk.
Which was, I won't show it to you, read it to you, but a beautiful letter.
Is there a line you can share that struck you most?
There were numerous lines, so well written, so thoughtful.
Well, could he do the same for Joe Biden? Well, I know it's the pomp and circumstance. It's the closest thing we have to royalty, Dan. I'm a chick. I'll admit it. I love watching, you know, when the Obamas turned over the keys to the White House, I mean, metaphorically, to the Trumps. And I liked, you know, when the Bushes did for the Obamas. I like that. That just shows unity and that we're one country. And we're not going to have that for the first time in our lifetime, for the first time in 150 years. The outgoing president is not going to be at the inauguration when he damn well could be.
Mary Kay in Western Springs.
Morning. Good morning. Has Trump done anything conventionally since he started, Amy? You know, I don't know. I sort of feel like just change it, disrupt it a little bit. Just, I mean, it's formality. I'm all for elegance and, you know, pomp and circumstance, just like you said. And I I love it. I can't wait till the world goes, or our country goes back to the age of elegance like we had back, you know, when we were getting married and, you know, things were beautiful. And now people, you know, are back to doing things. You know, I feel like we live in an IKEA world. You just throw everything out and start over again. And these, I don't know, I'm all over the place this morning because I just got up. But, you know, I am Trump's most important thing that he did is change the narrative of this country. And he got 74 million or 79 million people on board with him. And that to me is important. That's the biggest change. Talk about hope and change. I feel like we have hope and change right now. I'm going to ride it out for 4 more years. I have a feeling Biden is going to invoke the 25th Amendment and turn it over. Yeah, actually, I do. I think he's going to get up there and say, hey, I can't do this. I'm brain dead, or, you know, I don't know.
Sure.
What
All
do
right.
you think, Dan?
All right. Thanks for the call, Mary Kay. Yeah, I doubt that Biden invokes the 25th Amendment on himself.
No, I know.
But,
Kamala Harris will have to do it.
I don't. Honestly, can people just stop with this? Biden's going to be 3 months. Biden's going to be 6 months. This is how it's going to play out. You have no idea. You have no idea. Well, it's like you're predicting somebody else's death.
Right.
Just stop. What is the point of that conversation? I don't understand it. He's the president of the United States. Joe Biden is going to be tomorrow. And then we'll see how long it lasts. And frankly, what difference does it make? Oh, this is going to happen, and then Kamala's going to take over. So what changes? The facilitator for the radical left in the White House? So what? It's just mindless to me, that conversation.
Well, what do you think about President Trump planning his farewell ceremony for himself at Joint Base Andrews?
What about it?
I
read a report that aides are planning his farewell event at Andrews Air Force Base. What's the difference?
You don't think he should be sitting there at the inauguration?
I if you listen to this show,
yeah,
I have actually been on this show before,
yeah,
where
I
said from the beginning when it was announced that he was not attending the inauguration, he should attend the inauguration. Okay, so now that we've got that settled, what he should do versus what he's going to do, I mean, you can debate that all day long. What about reflecting back on the last 4 years? And
we're going to hear from him today.
Was the paradigm shift with Trump? It wasn't even China policy, although that was certainly a marked departure from where sort of establishment Republican perspective was on China. There was a paradigm shift with him. Len and Fox Lake.
Morning, guys. I got a few things to say. The biggest thing, and Dan, I think I got this one as far as what you're looking for, exposing the swamp. Prior to 4 years ago, nobody really talked about the swamp. And with Donald Trump, from Paul Ryan being the Speaker of the House during his first two terms, I thought Paul Ryan was a good guy. He's an evil human being. He's the swamp. Dan, you know, what's evil? Destroying the greatest country that's ever existed in mankind? Because that's where we're going. And things could have been done to, I mean, Trump is a human being. He's a blip in history. But he was the one person that was strong enough to take the pounding that he took for 5 years. Incredible. I don't think many people would have been able to withstand what he did. And as far as him sitting in the inauguration, you guys, I know we got to heal and all this, but the reality is, with what the left is doing with censorship, they're pushing for a one-party rule of our country, and anybody that's paid any attention to history can kind of see what that will lead to, the totalitarianism that's going to lead to. So, I don't know. You guys have a good day.
Thanks for the call, Len. I think you're, you know, in the right neighborhood, but you're on the wrong street in terms of what the paradigm shift is, at least what I'm thinking about. One thing I will also challenge, since this is sort of the phraseology that people start saying and then people start repeating and nobody ever actually chooses to spend a second of reflection on it. I know we have to heal. We do? Why do we have to heal? What are the terms of that healing? There's nothing we have to do in terms of healing, whatever that means. What is it? And by the way, what does that mean? Healing means what? We go from where we are today to where we to a place of healing. What does that look like? Can somebody describe it? Rather than just throwing out these feel good words, like just another sentimental barbarian talking head on one of these cable news, ghastly cable news programs. No, we don't have to heal, actually. I'm not taking a position that we shouldn't heal, whatever you think that means, that there shouldn't be some sort of recognition of first principles is what I mean, and then we hash out our differences peacefully, if that's what you mean by healing. But it doesn't have to happen.
Well, if Trump supporters see their president not talking to the incoming president, why would they ever talk to Democrats on the street?
Because
there's some sycophants. Are normal Republicans, Dan, that wouldn't go storming in the Capitol. And then there's these people that were, I don't know, I won't call it a cult, but that were really all in for Trump and would stop at nothing, even, you know, violent behavior in order to support their president. Wouldn't that help with that group of Trump supporters?
I don't know who that group of Trump supporters is that you're talking about exactly. People who meandered into the Capitol, people who engaged in violence. I don't know. He's renounced those Trump supporters in videos. Perhaps he was lethargic in doing so on the day of. But nobody has promoted violence. Nobody sees somebody who uses violence as the means to political ends preemptively as representative of 74 million Trump voters. The whole when they see him do something, I don't know. Do people have agency? If the president of the United States does something, then I do the same thing. Do you just mimic what other people do, regardless of bumping it up against your own belief system? Whatever Trump does, I do. If that's what you're doing, then you have a problem. It's a larger problem. Whatever Obama says, I say. If that's what you're saying, that's how you come to views on things, then you have a problem that has nothing to do with Obama and has everything to do with you. You've surrendered your agency as a actualized human being. A politician does something, I just follow him. He's a politician. He's governor. He's president. So what? Do you make your own decisions? 91% of Trump supporters, by the way, don't support his impeachment. More than three quarters would still vote for him for president. So all of this, Trump is done, this and that. He's not done because he represented a paradigm shift, an important paradigm shift. And I'll continue to ask the question and see if anybody gets the answer.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Joe Sternberg writing in the Wall Street Journal. The best argument for Donald Trump was that he led and gave voice to millions of Americans who had been leaderless and voiceless for decades. The secret people, as a British poet once described his similarly disdained countrymen, smiled at, paid, passed over. The deplorables, mm-hmm. The men and women whom the media, entertainment, and corporate human resources types never meet in their local Whole Foods, but deride as bigots and brutish Neanderthals. Is that the key accomplishment, the key change of the Trump administration, the Trump years, Trump's presidency? I think that's true, but I don't think that's the fundamental paradigm shift that Trump offered. 312-642-5600, Turnkey DePro answer line. 646-36-DA, Turnkey DePro text line. Let me try another hint here.
Okay.
Hillary Clinton welcomed Nancy Pelosi on her podcast recently.
Does everybody have a podcast now?
Apparently.
Yeah.
This is how that conversation went. So the question is, do we need some sort of post-Trump presidency commission to yet again investigate President Trump for Russian collusion, for colluding with Putin and the Russians? No let up there. So not only are they going to keep Trump alive in your hearts and minds and on CNN's scroll through an impeachment trial, but also through a 9/11 commission, 9/11 style commission, according to Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton. Listen.
So disappointing, but I think we've already known about a lot of these things. You see evidence of the 302s.
No, that's not. That's it.
We learned a lot about our system of government over the last 4 years with a president who disdains democracy and, as you have said numerous times, has other agendas. What they all are, I don't think we yet know. I hope historically we will find out who he's beholden to, who pulls his strings. I would love to see his phone records to see whether he was talking to Putin the day that the insurgents invaded our capital. But we now know that not just him, but his enablers, his accomplices, his cult members have the same disregard for democracy. Do you think we need a 9/11 type commission to investigate and report everything that they can pull together and explain what happened?
I do. Let me, again, to your point of who is he beholden to, as I've said over and over, as I said to him in that picture with my blue suit,
right,
as I was leaving, what I was saying to him as I was pointing rudely at him, with you, Mr. President, all roads lead to Putin. I don't know what Putin has on him politically, financially, or personally, but what happened last week was a gift to Putin because Putin
right.
wants to undermine democracy in our country and throughout the world. And these people, unbeknownst to them maybe, are Putin puppets. They were doing Putin's business when they did that, at the incitement of an insurrection by the President of the United States. So, yes, we should have a 9/11 commission, and there is strong support in the Congress to do that.
Are you a Putin puppet?
What is that? The Bouvier sisters there and their desire for a 9/11 commission to investigate Trump, make a report, you know, have Adam Schiff author it. You know, within the first 100 days or so of the Biden administration, maybe when the impeachment trial is over, they'll
right,
do this so that they can sustain Trump as their unifying force in the Democrat Socialist Party.
Yeah, keep the pedal to the metal. Let's go.
So what does that tell you about what Trump did that has them pursuing him after his presidency? Yeah, part of it is, yes, he's a polarizing figure for Republicans to some extent, not nearly as much as the press corps would have you believe based on the numbers. But more, but additionally, there's something else that he did in terms of shifting the paradigm of the Republican Party that has them chasing him after he's out of office to send a message to any Republican who would perpetuate the shift in paradigm that Trump provided. Think about it.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Mike in Elmhurst. Hey, Mike.
Mike.
Hello?
Yep,
you're
on.
Hi. I think the paradigm shift was twofold. I think it was America first. And along with that was taking our troops out of other countries.
Okay.
Not instigating wars.
Okay. I think thanks for the call, Mike. I think that certainly goes in his plus column, the de-escalation of conflicts involving American soldiers.
Right, in Afghanistan.
The America First thing was afoot before Trump. It was afoot in the candidacies of Ross Perot, wasn't it? Don't you know a lot of Ross Perot voters who turned out to be Trump voters? So that was afoot. I mean, did he raise it to another level? Sure. I don't think that's the most important thing. Rich in Indian Head Park.
Oh, yes. Good morning, Dan and Amy. The one thing I have to say is whether you love Trump or you hated Trump, he's Trump to the very end here. He didn't change. He's been the same throughout. And one other thing, you mentioned a letter that Obama wrote Trump.
Mm-hmm. That's what they normally do. The outgoing president leaves a letter in the Oval Office in the top right-hand drawer.
Yeah, well, was that a letter when the song was playing Backstabbers?
Thanks for the call, Rich. Appreciate it. Chip in St. Charles.
The corruption in Washington, D.C., and actually was so deep that Trump got in the way of it, and these people were making so much money that they got to get rid of Trump. They can't go back to the old days where there was actually honesty in Washington, D.C. We have to have they want the corruption. They want the money-making. They want the skim. And Joe Biden is the skim monkey. He's the people who showed everybody how to do it. That's why he was Obama's vice president. And they don't want to go back to the old days. They want their money back. And Trump is standing in the way of them getting their skim back. And it's only taxpayers' money that they're skimming, right? So am I right about that, Dan?
Thanks for the call, Chip. Look, yes, did he expose what's happening in the swamp in a way that it really hasn't been exposed in some time? Yes. No question. Did he expose the D.C. press corps for who they really are?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. No question.
Why they hated him and they ran against him for 4 years.
In a way that's never been done. I don't think it's ever been done.
Never in our lifetimes.
He had a great job of forcing people to show you who they really are. No question. By the way, including some within his own ranks, some of the personnel choices he made were horrific. But yes, he has a great talent for getting people to show you who they are, which is very useful. But what was it that he did? What's the takeaway that can be adopted by others that produced what we're describing and what Chip in St. Charles was describing? That's what I'm getting to. It's a simple thing, but it's an important thing. It's fundamental. You know, the fundamentals are always simple principles. It's a simple one. You're overthinking it. Mark in Rochelle.
Yeah, I had about 3 points. I'll try and make them quick. But first, Trump did what he said he was going to do and stuck to it. And two, I believe that some of the paradigm shift, a little unrelated to Trump, was basically the control of language. That's like the media and the left like to just decide or change what words mean and whether they're bad or good or what indifferent or whatever. And three, you talked about healing earlier. And for me, and maybe for other people, it's really the word healing is different. It would mean something different. And I think a huge step would be in whether the election was stolen or not, whether people believe that or not, if they would explain some of the anomalies, like the one that hit hard for me was the negative 432,000 votes for Trump in Pennsylvania. If they would explain, instead of trying to just poo-poo it, those, even if they weren't significant enough to change the election, if they would just come up with logical explanations instead of telling people to be quiet and just go away. So there you go.
Fair enough. Thanks for the call, Mark. Mike in Bolingbrook.
Yeah, I think the thing that Trump made everyone aware of on both sides is the accountability factor, the accountability for the fellow Republicans, definitely the accountability for the Democrats, and just called it how he saw it. And I think the regular voting public, Democrat, Republican, doesn't matter, actually liked the fact that this guy was a regular guy, just like them. And he called out, and I honestly believe that drain the swamp was a good cliche, but it was way too deep for a four-year term.
I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah, why did people think a billionaire was a regular guy? I'm agreeing with Mike in Bolingbrook. Why did they think that? Billionaire.
Because he felt our pain. I mean, he felt the neglect of that people were neglected by.
Felt our pain. That's very Bill Clinton-ish. That's not it. Why did he think, why does regular guys, why do truck drivers and blue-collar guys and mid-level managers at some faceless corporation, why did they think that he was a regular guy like them?
I didn't think he'd last. I mean, when he showed up in a suit in Iowa, I thought, oh my, people wear, you know, sweatpants or jeans, or he was always true to himself, never a phony.
Mark in Portage.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
I think the biggest thing is that he showed everybody in the country, and that's why he got so much vitriol back at him, that big government's bad, little government's good. It can produce. Economically, security-wise, we put all our hens in one basket. We look good.
Thanks for the call, Mark. Gabby.
Getting closer to
Are we circling the drain? I think a lot of people are right around the target. Right street, wrong address. Gabby in Schaumburg.
Hi, good morning. I think he displayed no fear. He was fearless in what he wanted to do. And I think my letter to Biden in his top drawer would be to tell him to go pound sand. And that's all I had to say. Pleasure talking to you guys.
Thanks, Gabby.
Thanks, Gabby, for calling in.
Elegant in its brevity, that letter.
One sentence and you're done.
John in Lake Geneva.
Yeah, Donald Trump is not a career politician. This was not a career move for him. He did this because he didn't need to be fixed, and he wanted to make America great again. And these guys are coming out because they are career politicians, and no one can ever do this again.
Thanks for the call, John. A friend of mine who texted me has it, but I'll wait.
Oh, come on.
Tom in Oswego.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. I think one of the things that he's exposed to everybody was how government doesn't work, and that the politicians, both sides, Republicans and Democrats, they don't have the answers. They don't know how to fix things. They know how to add to the problem. Make it worse, but they don't know how to fix things. And a lot of our frustration out there is that nothing is getting solved, not getting fixed. And I think he's demonstrated that that's one of the problems, or the biggest problem.
All right. Thanks for the call, Tom. Elliot in Wilmette.
Good morning. Among other things, Trump allowed people to believe in themselves again and the productivity of the regular people of the United States. We don't need government as much as they think we need government.
That's a good one. That's
got another
one,
text
Elliot.
On our text line.
Thanks,
Trump's,
Elliot.
Trump spoke our language.
Okay. It's all right. In terms of like why you had kinship with him, even though people came from very different places. People come from very different places than Trump did, but you felt a kinship to him because he spoke the common vernacular. Okay, yeah. That's perhaps a part of it. Ralph and Rantoul.
Yeah, being another regular guy, I probably would have outfitted my 737, maybe with slightly different interior choices. But that's for a discussion.
Shag carpet.
Around the Harvard.
Yeah.
The Harvard Club, you know, Courvoisier in a glass and around the paneled library. What I think he did, and right. Which is why I think the Democrats are trying to crush him and erase him, and take his little slip of paper and put it down the memory hole and vaporize it, is that he moved the base away from this belief that you had to be some sort of 737-owning country club jet-setter East Coast sort of rhino Republican. He really did expand the base, and right now I think that's why the Democrats are on full-on attack mode, because they realize that a good portion of the base they relied upon for years for automatic votes, they no gots anymore, which is why the caravans are starting again. They've got to try to build up their automatic base. I think that's what he's moved the party. He's moved the party away from this country club Republican mindset. And how permanent that is, I don't know. I think there are guys in Washington and about like McConnell and other folks that would be fundamentally uncomfortable with regular people being attracted to the Republican Party. But I know that the full-on hate fest is there, and they want to try to make sure that the people that were attracted to him are demoralized and think that they have nowhere to go in the Republican Party. So why not come on back and be an automatic moron Democrat voter again?
All right. Thanks for the call, Ralph. Yeah.
Damn, TikTok.
So
we want to know that this is the morning answer here.
Matt, I'll give first credit to Matt the Manufacturer, I'll call him. Fight back, never apologize, don't give ground. Yep.
Simple yet true.
That's it was always attitude. Not necessarily articulation, because if you've listened to the show for any period of time, you know my qualms with President Trump and his communication style, and as well as sometimes his choice of targets, but attitude, disposition, again, not necessarily the enunciation, fight back, unyielding in the same way the left is. And he would basically take on all comers. That is a paradigm shift in attitude for the Republican Party at the leadership level. And I'm talking about at minimum for my lifetime. I mean, not even the great Ronald Reagan was as unyielding as President Trump. Certainly, he wasn't as pugnacious. He was unyielding in a sense, but it was still a different attitude, really a different attitude than Trump. Again, not all of the manifestations of it, but in terms of the first principle, the where is this coming from? This is who we are. Where, you know, what is the expression of who we are? His attitude of never folding, being unyielding, punching back as hard or harder than he got punched by his enemies within the perimeter or outside the perimeter. That's the paradigm shift for the Republican Party. And if the Republican Party wants to continue to attract 74 million voters in presidential elections, then at minimum they should take that away from his presidency.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Amy, I understand I can resume my Lambada classes.
Yes, now. That's right. That's very important. Yeah, yesterday, out of the blue at about 5:15 at night, all of a sudden, the news broke that the IDPH has changed the rules yet again, and now we're semi-free. We're in Region 11. That's the city of Chicago, because I know you're really big into the regions. So Cook County, the city of Chicago, DuPage County, McHenry County, pretty much everybody except for Will County and Kankakee counties are free. So we can have group classes. Casinos are open. That's such fantastic news. Movie theaters can open. Group exercises and museums can reopen. But the thing is, the metrics, if he was following the rules, and I'm looking at the positivity rate, you know, because it's all about the positivity rate, still not there yet in the city of Chicago. We're at 8.8. We're supposed to be at 8% and lower for 7 days.
Then those places shouldn't be reopened.
Exactly. But he changed the rules probably because of Mayor Lightfoot.
I am very, very focused on getting our restaurants reopened. If we look at the various criteria that the state has set, we are meeting most, if not all, of those. That's a conversation that I will have with the governor. But I want to get our restaurants and our bars reopened as quickly as possible. I said this the other day. The restaurant setting in particular, highly regulated. We have inspections on a regular basis. They've gone above and beyond to put in mitigation controls inside of the restaurants. They are going to be one of the safer places.
Yeah, well, except they're not open.
Well, here's the thing, though. I bet in 2 days before this weekend,
they will be reopened for indoor dining. I mean, why not? They changed the rules already. Change them further. Biden's in office. I mean, timing's everything. You know, I've always said that. And in less than 24 hours.
Oh, you're the one who came up with that.
Oh, well, yeah. No, exactly. Didn't you know? But this is another example of Democrats even have to see how we have been played here in Illinois. If it's about the metrics and the safety, then why are you changing the rules? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Shouldn't be. All of those establishments should be closed until those thresholds that Pritzker set are met, right?
Yeah. She wanted to, you know, reopen the restaurants and everything to reduce the risk of underground parties that didn't follow protocols.
I understand.
I
want to know what the standard is. And they set a standard, and now the media must call on Pritzker to keep these places shut down. Lightfoot, too. We meet most of the metrics. I'm sorry, Triple Threat. Most is not all. All. We're in the business of saving lives. Out of an abundance of caution, most is not good enough. Right? I mean, I hate to punish business owners, but many of them seem to enjoy that here, the punishment. So I just want to make sure that there is an articulation of the change and an explanation for the change that Pritzker and Lightfoot don't get away with just pretending this was their position all the time, the same way that St. Cuomo of COVID-19 in New York is trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't anybody find it odd that Democratic leaders are suddenly interested in reopening the economy again? You know, even though the metrics aren't there, we might not be able to save one life, Dan, but now that goes out the window. And now we might can have travel sports because we can have group exercises in tier two. And just, you know, Southern Illinois and parts of Central Illinois aren't back to phase four.
Can you stop using tiers and phases that don't mean anything? Which part of that is unclear to you? Nobody knows what that means. And that's I don't even understand it. You're talking like a member of the nomenclatura who also don't know what the hell they're talking about.
I'm just letting you know that phase four was what happened before November 20th, before they took all of our freedoms away.
What is phase four?
Phase four means you can have travel sports, group classes for exercise, gyms open, casinos open, movie theaters, restaurants, and bars.
So you can have you can do a casino now, but you can't do indoor dining.
Exactly. And Rosemont's open today. Everything's open today. All the casinos in Illinois. Except for, all the casinos in Illinois except for East St. Louis can be open today.
Aaron Rodgers, yes, that Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback for the Green Bay Packers, he was on a radio talk show with or a podcast or something with his friend of his, Pat McAfee, used to be a kicker for the Colts. And he came on the show to talk about his $500,000 donation to Barstool Sports' relief fund for small businesses that Portnoy set up and is distributing around the country. It's great.
It's awesome.
And listen to what Aaron Rodgers had to say. You know,
he's a California boy.
For you cheesehead haters, it's going to be tough to hate Aaron Rodgers. A lot tougher after this.
It's just not having a reliance on the government to help you out, because obviously they've shown that's not going to be the way they're going to do it. I mean, they've put these rules in place. They're not even following their own rules. I mean, how many people have gotten caught? Don't travel. Don't leave the state. Oh, here's so-and-so on a vacation. Oh. Don't go to your haircut. Oh, here's so-and-so at a salon. Don't eat out at a restaurant, you know, unless you're wearing a mask and separate. Oh, here's a picture of the governor of California violating those rules. Oh, public schools are closed, but I can send my kids to a private school in person.
Yep.
Schooling. It's like, I mean, for us to count on the government to help us out is becoming a joke at this point. We've seen, you know, they drop a 500-page bill and millions and in some cases billions of dollars going to other countries. Like, it's not like they're keeping this money back on the home front for
trillions,
us.
I think, at this point. I think it's.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty
I
good.
I still don't want him to beat the Bucks, but yes, that's a.
Pretty good from Aaron Rodgers. How about that?
And it's not just Newsom. It's Governor Pritzker. He sends their kids to private school. Lightfoot, the CEO of CPS. So they set rules in place that their kids do not have to follow. And now they're changing the rules again because they got what they wanted. Biden won. Less than 24 hours, he's going to be the next president. Isn't this strange to anybody else? Anybody else upset about this?
Well, obviously, it's it's hypocritical. The question is, what do you want them to do about it? Do you want them to force people, the people that they can force? Because, again, we know that wide swaths of businesses of all designation are open right now and flaunting and doing so in a colorful way, many of them, these restrictions. They're not, you know, they're unenforceable. You think like his announcement on Friday about Southern Illinois, south of Springfield, has any...
They don't even wear masks.
Relevance
there.
To what they're they've been doing for the last, I don't know, 6 months or so, probably.
Do you know the liquor commissioner in Normal, Illinois, said, I'll pay your liquor fine or your liquor license for the next year if you please just shut down and follow Pritzker's advice. And not one restaurant or bar took them up on that.
Yeah, because they're not in business to hold a liquor license. They're in business to make a living.
I'm just saying they dangled that in front of them, like, please comply. We'll spot you for a year, and not one restaurant or bar owner took them up on
it. It's better than $10,000 fines in the city of Chicago. And so that's why this is on Lightfoot as well. She's just trying to offload blame on Pritzker. This is coming apart for them. And the question is, do you want to just let it come apart and get everybody open as a path of least resistance as quickly as possible? You know, have them tell the public health goon squads to stand down and just pretend this never happened, just sort of walk past it? Or do you really want to see them held to account and forced to explain why they want to rush back into things they said that were dangerous, that they were opposed to? They set these thresholds for a reason. These are men and women of science and data. And so the scientific thresholds, data-rich modeling needs to be abided if we're going to be safe and alone together and together alone and blah, blah, blah. Because it's remarkable. Did you hear the incoming CDC director? She was on Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan. Rochelle Walensky is her name. This is what she said about the coming weeks, which is what other public health professionals are saying, too. So maybe this should be put to Jelly Belly and Triple Threat at their next pressers to say, how can you do this? How can we be even inching towards a reopening of any business? We should be moving more in the direction of shutdown based on the standards that you have set and the arguments that you have made over the last 10 months. Because here's what's in front of us, according to the incoming, the Biden administration CDC director, Dr. Walensky.
Outgoing CDC director says what we're about to be in the worst months. Do you agree with his forecast that it's going to get worse?
Unfortunately, I do. I think that, you know, we've, as you noted, nearly 4,000 deaths a day, almost 400,000 deaths total by the middle of February. We expect 500,000 deaths in this country. That doesn't speak to the tens of thousands of people who are living with a yet uncharacterized syndrome after they've been recovered. And we still yet haven't seen the ramifications of what happened from the holiday travel, from holiday gathering, in terms of high rates of hospitalizations and the deaths thereafter. So yes, I think we still have some dark weeks ahead.
Exactly.
Are they trying to stay relevant? That's why they're lying. We're 19 days out from New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. Okay, we're out of the surge, possible surge zone, and most cities are doing well. I mean, yesterday we had 3,000 cases in Illinois, 54 deaths every day in Illinois before this happened. 300 people died a day. 7,000 to 8,000 people die a day in the United States, and no one's dying from the flu. The flu's eradicated for some reason.
Yeah, I got it. And the point is, this is worse than it was when you locked us down. It's supposed to get worse yet, according to Biden's incoming CDC director. So explain to us the change in position. Why don't the thresholds you set that were culled from science and data and the experts and the epidemiologists, why don't they matter anymore? I want an answer. I don't want to disabuse people of what Dr. Walensky is saying. I want to expose the arbitrariness, the politicization of this from the beginning. Tell me, governor, mayor, how you can do this based on what you did when it wasn't as bad, with the prospect that from Biden's CDC director and other public health professionals that it's going to get worse. Do you agree or disagree with Dr. Walensky? Do your experts agree or disagree with Dr. Walensky? If they agree, then explain yourself. If they disagree, then have them explain themselves. How is she wrong? It's time to start putting these people on the spot for the implications of the policies they chose. You have to expose their hypocrisy in peacock-like colors for people. Don't walk past it. Frank in Franklin Park.
Yeah, unfortunately, Dan and Amy, there's not going to be a reporter with the chutzpah to do that. Just like there's not going to be a reporter that's going to hold Joe Biden to the fire. When he says that he wants to do 100 million vaccinations by 100th day, actually, that would slow down the rate of vaccinations we're currently doing. But no one's going to call him out on that now, are they?
Well, they can't get to him. And we can't get to Pritzker because they're doing virtual. And he's not even having a press conference today. This is big news. You'd think he'd have something today, right? He said, you know, to pat himself on the back, we're opening different regions and different tiers.
Then put
but
it,
he's
then
completely
put it,
silent.
Then put it to your fear-addled, uninformed friends, family members, colleagues, and so forth.
Okay.
The argument isn't just at the direction of Jelly Belly. It's at all of Jelly Belly's acolytes, all of the fearful and fearmongers. David and McCook.
Hey, good morning, guys. I think Pritzker and Lightfoot should start a new game show instead of Wheel of Fortune. We'll call it Wheel of Standards. Spin the wheel and see what the metrics will be today. Oh, crap, it's 8.3. Wait till tomorrow and it'll change.
Thanks for the call, David. Ray in Barrington.
Hey, good morning. I don't know that you're right, Dan. The local press, except for Amy, nobody asked any questions, and it's not a press conference because there's zero follow-up involved. The experts flip-flopped on everything. Remember when it was going to be the northern states when it got cold that were going to skyrocket? Instead, it's California and Arizona and the southern states that are doing it.
Right.
And the biggest hypocrisy is going to be, you know, miraculously, vaccines 1 and 2 came out right after the election. I guarantee you 3 and 4 will come out right after the inauguration.
Thanks, Ray. Will and Skokie.
Yeah, good morning. I'm a home inspector, and I have to constantly deal with codes and restrictions and setups by local municipalities where you cross the street and the rules are totally different. People look to government to set standards, primarily because lawyers want a standard that they can use in court to sue you. But by definition, any government standard is by definition arbitrary because they really don't know. They're setting it up because they have to as opposed to based on anything having to deal with reality. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Will. Well, that I don't disagree with that, generally speaking, and that's why this is such a teachable moment. You actually have people's attention. Maybe they could learn something. Ed in Oak Brook.
Yeah, you know what? This whole thing is a bunch of crap, as you guys have been pointing out for, I guess, a couple of years now. But the thing that they're doing, and you pointed it out also, is they're conditioning us for this fear factor, and everything is going to be safety, including speech. You can see that CNN wants to shut off all conservative talk. You want to see that they're going to start, they're admitting that the Second Amendment is there, but what they're going to make it is so safe that for gun ownership that you won't be even able to have a gun. And as far as your Trump legacy, you're right, Dan. He stood up to those guys, and his administration really never had a chance. And that jerk Bill Maher, who says that Trump was controversial, was because they made him controversial. If they wouldn't have just attacked him every single day, there wouldn't be this decisiveness in this country. And one of your callers mentioned it. You want peace. You want reconciliation in this country? Answer the questions. Why was there voter fraud? Why was there irregularities? Just tell me, where did those votes come from, Pennsylvania? How did Trump votes get taken away and added to Biden? Just tell me how this happened or explain it, and then maybe we'll have peace in this country. And I'm not so much a Trump guy. I'm more of an anti-Democrat guy.
All right, thanks, Ed.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. What to do with the blacklisting and the purging of big tech companies in corporate America more generally? Do you just walk away from the platforms? Do you stop patronizing the businesses, purchasing their products? What's your response? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636DA, turnkey.pro, text line. While you're thinking about that, more undercover journalism from James O'Keefe and Project Veritas. This time they were able to video some of the comments of a Twitter executive named Vijaya Gaddi. She is the Twitter's legal policy and trust lead.
How do you get a job like that?
That's an Orwellian company. You should have an Orwellian title.
Yeah, looks good on your resume, huh?
And here's what she said about the purging going on at Twitter, extending well beyond banning Donald Trump.
There's also been a lot of questions about retros, of course we're going to do a retro. I mean, we're in the midst of a retro around the election generally. This will be most definitely folded into it. What we saw Wednesday morning was really concerning to us, obviously, so a small team gathered from Trust and Safety. We were discussing the potential for violence to happen, and we decided to escalate our enforcement of the civic integrity policy and use a label that disabled engagements to stop the spread of potentially inflammatory content, which is the content around election interference, election fraud, stealing the election, that type of thing. We think that the severity of what's happening on the ground, coupled with the information that's contained in these tweets, this misleading information about the election being stolen, and the massive fraud around the election, are what is changing our analysis of how we should enforce this policy. It is a much more severe violation, given what we're seeing on the ground. We've made the decision yesterday that we are going to actually be more aggressive in our enforcement beyond de-amplification. We are actually going to, for accounts that are primary purpose, spreading QAnon theories, we are going to, conspiracy theories, we are going to be permanently suspending those accounts.
We are doing everything that we can to ensure that Twitter is being used in a positive way that possibly affects society.
Yeah, that at the end obviously was the garden gnome, Jack Dorsey. So they're going to expand, and I'm not just talking about QAnon. They're using QAnon as a cover to talk about it expanding more generally to expunge dissent. And in case you're skeptical, Max Boot writing in the Washington Post, Trump couldn't have incited sedition without the help of Fox. He tweeted, this is consistent with his column, Biden needs to reinvigorate the FCC to slow the lies and sedition from Fox and other right-wing broadcasters, like your friends here at Talk Radio, or else the terrorism we saw on January 6th may only be the beginning rather than the end of the plot against America. You're all violent extremists, listening to violent extremists. And the FCC needs to get involved to shut down the lines of communication among the violent extremists.
Have we ever incited violence here in this show?
That's the message.
Right. Because we haven't. Take Trump down, take them all down, Dan.
Blacklists are the rage in publishing. A response from Thomas Spence, who is the president of Regnery Publishing. This is in response to Regnery announcing that they will publish Josh Hawley's book after his contract with Simon & Schuster was canceled. But it's more than about Josh Hawley. Mr. Spence writes, in recent days, I've been taking calls from journalists asking which authors I would refuse to publish. That's an odd question to ask an American publisher, but suddenly it seems to be on everyone's mind in our industry. Some 250 self-described publishing professionals, mostly junior employees of major houses, have issued a statement titled "No Book Deals for Traitors," a category in which they include any quote-unquote participant in the Trump administration. Rather than calling it cancel culture, Mr. Spence prefers the older term that goes back to the McCarthy era, blacklisting, because it reminds people of the ugliness of that period now being visited upon in this period. Not so long ago, writes Spence, publishing professionals would have been horrified to be accused of that. Today, they compete to see who can proclaim his blacklist with the fiercest invective. He concludes that today's censors recognize no limits. And he appeals to the real professionals of publishing. Some of you may be the bosses and mentors of those who signed that mindless rant he wrote about, he referenced. Remember, you are Americans. Americans argue, write, preach, campaign, and vote. They don't blacklist. Well, don't they? Don't they? Now, on the opposite side of corporate titans like Richard Branson, who said of the January 6th assault, the Capitol riot stemmed from white Americans' fear of losing power. Yeah, right. This is the line. This is the cover story. White Americans fear losing power. This is what the enforcers of the blacklisting left use to cover their anti-small d democratic, illiberal, authoritarian impulses and actions. If not afoul of federal law or the Constitution by the letter, certainly it is afoul of both in spirit, isn't it?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 6, 636-46, type in DA, then a quick comment.
So what to do? What to do? Perhaps a hint. I refer to Goya Foods CEO and President Bob Unanue, who you may remember from a couple of months ago. He was targeted by AOC and
right.
her brigade for daring to compliment President Trump and compare his own entrepreneurial story and that of his family's.
And guess what happened?
To President Sorry. Trump's.
Yeah, sales went through the roof and they nominated her Employee of the Month.
he said recently, "We are one nation under God. We are not one nation under Twitter. We're not one nation under big media or under central government. We're trying to have media, big tech control our lives. The government control our lives. They want to cancel God. They want to cancel our speech. They want to cancel our culture, our history, our liberty. They want to control us. The few controlling the many like a bunch of sheep. None of these people care about us. We can move away from God. We cannot move away from God. We need to love and to build, not hate and destroy." So there's one corporate CEO of a very successful going concern that is willing to stand and be counted. What about you? Rusty in Rosemont, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. Just commenting on the, you know, a couple weeks ago we had the censorship that started. Now the playbook for the Democrats is to demonize all Republicans as troublemakers and as terrorists. As Amy said a second ago, you guys aren't on the show advocating violence. But now with the buildup of the military and all the cameras on that, oh, all Republicans, all Trump supporters are terrorists. And I think that's just, we're in trouble and we've got to fight back. Not fight back, fight, but
yeah.
that we're not bad people. We're good people. And yeah, a couple people went into the Capitol. They weren't looking to hurt anybody or do anything. None of them had, you know, guns or anything. They weren't burning anything.
They did.
A couple did. But it's not, you know, to blanket all Republicans as these bad people. I think that's their latest play, and it's frightening.
Thanks for the call, Rusty. Keith in Kankakee.
Good morning, Dan. Can I get your opinion to help me understand the left a little bit? Does the left, the people in power, do they believe these lies, or is it just a game?
I think that there are some that are ideologues and they believe, and there are others who take the path of least resistance because it's fashionable, because they're afraid, because they're cynical and superficial and venal. So I think some know that some of this is overheated and over the top, but the heck if they're going to be the one that stands in front of the tank. And others are happy to drive the tank. They think they're morally superior behind the tank.
Right. So you played Pelosi earlier with Hillary Clinton, and Pelosi was still pressing, you know, on the Russian collusion. She can't possibly believe this, can she?
You know, I mean, I don't know what she believes, Keith. I actually don't really care, you know, what people say they think, what people tell you who they are. Look at what people do when they show you who they are. So whether Pelosi is one of those who just sees this as a cynical path to power and the elimination of her political opponents, or whether she is really a dyed-in-the-wool ideologue committed to the proletariat utopia, I don't really care, because her actions are the same regardless of what her stated belief is. Lee and Hammond.
Yeah, guys, you know, when are we going to stop playing patty cake with these idiots on the left and call them for what they are? They're un-American fascists. They don't want any dissent. They don't want any other opinion. They're using the race card here. What are you trying to tell me, that people of color don't want to live in a free, open society? They want to live under, you know, this lunacy that these idiots are promoting? I can't believe that. You know, and the thing is, we let them get away with it. Why? I don't understand it.
Thanks for the call, Lee. Well, the why is a good question. This is the prompt to ask, what do you think? How do you want to participate? Because there's a good piece, and I talked to the gentleman yesterday, a guy named Mark Pulliam, who lives in East Tennessee now. And he lives in a community in East Tennessee that went 70% for Trump. And yet when he looks around at the institutions in his community, what's happening at his Presbyterian church, what's happening in his school, you know, what they're teaching, what he sees being pumped out of that school, what he sees in the local newspaper, it's all left. Hmm. And this is the same thing that happened in Illinois. You think I live in a, you know, center-right, sensible enclave. Well, the left is happy to incur in those enclaves, and if you don't want to defend your institutions, if you don't want to defend your community, if you don't want to pay any mind to what's being taught in the schools or preached from the pulpit, then they're happy to roll right over you and have people say, I remember when DuPage County used to be Republican. I remember when the North Shore used to be Republican. So that's why I say, and we've said on the show before, you know, pay attention to what's happening right next door to you in the institutions you're already a participant.
I thought the Democratic Party was a party of acceptance.
Okay. I think we're well beyond that.
Yeah, they don't.
The question is, what are you going to do about what you know to be true?
When Parler opens back up, are you going to get off Twitter?
Parler's not coming back, I don't think. I think Parler's got a real problem. And with each passing day, it's more and more complicated. And I don't want to get into the technical details of it, but I talked to somebody who is very knowledgeable in this space about websites and web servers like Amazon Web Services, that's specifically, and you know, how you have to program and how you have to deprogram. And in fact, John Mates, the CEO, said basically he's frozen out. He posted this message, hi, is anybody there? And that, you know, to try and keep people engaged. I understand what he's doing. I appreciate it. I have tremendous respect for what Parler attempted to do, what he's trying to do. But they made a decision to go with Amazon Web Services, and that's probably going to be a fateful decision. That's not to say that something else won't spring up. But I think this idea of, we were talking about Trump. What's the takeaway from the Trump presidency? And my key takeaway, where I think he shifted the paradigm for the GOP, was attitude, unyielding in the fight, even if the articulation or the target wasn't always the best choice. He was on offense against his political opponents and unyielding in the fight. And yet I hear everybody saying, just get off Twitter, get off Facebook, get off this, get off that. I think there's somebody who wrote this. Oh, in the American Thinker, there's a piece by Hugh Myers. Check out Parler, Rumble, read the Bongino Report. Why? The Epoch Times, watch American Thought Leaders, so on and so forth. Yeah, okay, some of that's okay. But the whole point is, get in your silo. No. I mean, for some people, fine. But there have to be some people that want to stay in the arena and battle the left on every platform. I mean, isn't that consistent with what Trump would do? And right. By the way, was doing until he was banned in Twitter? I mean, think about Churchill in 1940. And this is a bit of a stretch in terms of comparison, but this is not saying anybody's a Nazi. This is just talking about sort of attitude, the attitude about a threat to your freedom. And this is a threat to your freedom, what's happening. Certainly a threat to your right to think and speak freely. And I don't know. That's a pretty fundamental threat in a free society, the right to think and free and speak freely. And what did Churchill say in 1940, he also said something, by the way, you should take up the fights you can win when you can best win them. And we haven't done that in a lot of swaths of this country, including in Chicagoland. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight in the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. And even if, which I do not for a moment believe, this island or a large part of it were subjugated and starving, then our empire beyond the seas, armed and guarded by the British fleet, would carry on the struggle until in God's good time, the new world with all its power and might steps forth to rescue and to the rescue and the liberation of the old. So this fight I'm talking about, of course, is intellectual. Fighting on the social media platforms, fighting intellectually through reason within your circles of influence, fighting for the civic and cultural institutions that make America America, and make sure that the values that guide their operation are consistent with our founding values. That's the fight on every front.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer. On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy and Congressman Stephen Finger Looking Cohen. You may remember him from his KFC stunt when Attorney General Barr wouldn't endure his nonsense at a committee hearing. Yeah, that's Stephen Cohen.
He's so gross. I can't even look at him.
I don't want
to see him eat.
He was on CNN yesterday. Talking about preparations for the inauguration.
Oh, setting up flags? 191,000 flags? That's what they're doing.
The military presence there and concerns about the National Guardsmen. No, not whether or not there were enough, but whether or not there was a fifth column action potentially afoot among the Guardsmen, because they're white.
This morning I was reading about this on my Twitter account, I guess, and people were reminding the people of Anwar Sadat and Indira Gandhi, who were killed by their own people. I was thinking the guard is 90 some odd percent, I believe, male. Only about 20% of white males voted for Biden. You got to figure that in the guard, which is predominantly more conservative, and I see that on my social media, and we know it, they're probably not more than 25% of the people that are there protecting us who voted for Biden. The other 75% are in the class that would be the large class of folks who might want to do something. And there were military people and police who took oaths to defend the Constitution and to protect and defend, who didn't do it, who were in the insurrection. So it does concern me. Absolutely not, Jim, but, you know, you draw a circle first. In the first circle is people who were for Trump and not for Biden, as far as people who would be within the zone of folks who you'd be suspect of. The suspect group is large.
A lot of suspects out there. A lot of suspects among the 25,000 National Guardsmen, and how many ever hundreds of thousands more around the country. Those white National Guardsmen who voted for Trump, you have to start out from the premise they're suspected assassins.
Yeah, they're expecting a possible insider threat. And Major General William Walker from Chicago Leo High School said they're going to vet them on the way in and vet them on the way out.
The FBI is part of it. The Secret Service is part of it. And once they are certain that there's no insider threat, then that soldier, guardsman or airman is given a credential.
For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Noah Rothman, associate editor for Commentary Magazine, author of Unjust, Social Justice and the Unmaking of America. Noah, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So the idea that you draw concentric circles around the National Guard contingent there, and white, Trump voter, that's the suspect group in terms of some sort of a threat to public safety, threat to the Biden presidency and President Biden himself, according to Stephen Cohen. He's very concerned about this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing my best to be as charitable as possible here. The threat environment, just as we understand it from public reporting, is pretty significant, and law enforcement agencies around the country are prepped for some sort of events to occur today, tomorrow, the days after. And so that can lead to a state of paranoia, and I understand it, and it's not necessarily inadvisable to be vigilant. Nevertheless, what the congressman articulated here is nothing short of bigotry. I don't see any way to describe it other than that. I mean, just to take his figures alone, assuming he's just not babbling off the top of his head, the 20% figure doesn't make any sense if you're talking about voters. According to the exit polling, 38% of white males and 44% of white females voted for Joe Biden. So he's not talking about the voting population. It's more egregious than that. He's talking about the entire adult population of a particular complexion, and that particular complexion is what renders them suspect. It's not only an insult to guardsmen, servicemen generally, who take an oath to the Constitution, but millions of law-abiding adults. It is, however, the ineluctable logic of whiteness. This is this vogue pseudo-academic theory that's prevalent on the left, which presupposes that whiteness is prevalent in every sector of society, from the entertainment industry to fashion to pedagogy to culinary arts. And it is not an indicator of racial characteristics. It doesn't describe racial characteristics, but ideological proclivities, according to people who describe it, except when it describes racial characteristics. It's a really malleable philosophy, and what it essentially does is articulate a logic for bigotry that is just academic enough to make it seem like it's not abject racism. But then occasionally somebody who is steeped in these ideas, like Representative Cohen, comes along and exposes it for what it is.
And Representative Cohen and his colleagues, whether in the academy or just in the House Democrat caucus, are they advancing the stated goal of healing the nation that I continue to hear so much about?
I don't imagine how this does much healing at all. Look, the threat is real. As I said before, this is not an exaggerated threat as we understand it today. We may look on this retrospectively in a couple of months or even a year and say, well, maybe we overreacted. But the events on January 6th were seminal, and they were traumatic. And I understand the desire to engage in some overreach here, because the threat is profound, and it was scary, and we should accept that it was scary. But there's nothing, obviously, that would relieve the kind of tensions that we're seeing here when you have members of Congress literally vilifying the majority of the population because of their skin color, and as though that is some sort of an enlightened and informed position. the only way you get there, the only way you have, you would say something like that, as he said it, without any self-consciousness, without any fear of professional consequences, is because this idea has been mainstreamed by center-left academics, by center-left political figures, as though it's a legitimate idea. And it doesn't, you don't have to scratch the surface before you get down to, you know, the obvious contradictions within it, which any superstition is exposed as once you examine it too closely. It's a species of any other sort of racial paranoia of the sort that the left has no problem recognizing when we're talking about minority populations, but it is a mirror image, and it is just as pernicious.
No, of 125 arrested, you had some Boogaloo Boys, some Proud Boys, some real far-right extremists, some Antifa BLM members, not a lot by any means. But do you think President Trump, by the speech that he delivered or what he's been posting on social media or maybe what he's been saying the past 4 years, motivated those people to storm the Capitol?
I do, and I've said as much in my book. This is a phenomenon that didn't appear yesterday. The violence that we've been seeing in the streets, both from left and right extremists, is a phenomenon that began in early 2016, and it began in part because Donald Trump incentivized it. Donald Trump fantasized about having his people beat up counter-protesters and demonstrations. When somebody did, he said that he would pay the legal fees of that individual. We have been through 4 years now where he has lionized people who engaged in violence. Governor Gianforte, for example, he called on people to mobilize in the streets to generate counter demonstrations against BLM protesters in the spring, which isn't the rule of law. It's just muscle. And that's the sort of thing that was irresponsible, and this is what you get from it. The problem is that you can't excise one violent aspect of a political coalition without expurgating the other. The violence on both sides legitimizes itself. They feed on each other. They justify each other's actions based on what the other guy does, and they show up in the streets to counter-protest against each other. They're two sides of the same coin, and you got to get rid of the coin. You can't get rid of other at one and say, okay, well, the threat has been excised. Did Donald Trump incept this phenomenon in American political life? No, he did not. Did he exacerbate those tensions? Yes, he did. Will they go away when he's gone? No, they will not. This is the sort of thing that needs to be addressed from the root, and it needs to be addressed comprehensively, and neither coalition is particularly interested in addressing the violence on their side.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I mean, I'm happy to address, I mean, and I think most conservatives are. If you've seen, we've seen anything in terms of the fallout and the public opinion with respect to what happened on January 6th, we've seen that conservatives like us here on this show are just as appalled and opposed to that sort of violence that occurred at the Capitol as we are the violence that occurred on the streets of America's cities last summer. That is not a position that is adopted by the left. In point of fact, they can't even bring themselves to talk in real time about rioting and violence that's still being generated by Antifa in Portland, in San Diego, in New York. Yesterday, on the occasion of the observance of Martin Luther King's life and times, you had, a dozen arrests in New York City by Black Lives Matter types who can't apparently assemble peacefully.
Well, 11 police officers were injured.
So the point is that across the board, conservatives are denouncing violence and say, we want to live in a peaceful, pluralist society. We'll stand up to thuggery, but we don't use political violence preemptorily. That is not legitimate. You know, protest ends with civil disobedience in this country, a la King. And the left is not of that attitude. So it seems to me there's a real disconnect, but there is a real consistency with respect to most conservatives about what we saw on the 6th and what we saw last year and continues into this year in America's streets.
Well, I think you can make a case for that. It's a case that I tend to agree with. Nevertheless, I do think the effort to shift blame away from the president for the conditions that he incepted, that he created on that day, in which he spent days on Twitter trying to create this crowd and threaten the Senate with a crowd, like he's Mark Antony after Julius Caesar's assassination, saying, I am the guy with the mob and they won't stand for this. And then directing them towards the Capitol and setting them loose and then being shocked by the events that followed, there is an effort, according to polling at least, among Republican leaners and conservatives in the general population to absolve the president of any responsibility for that condition. And I think it's blame shifting. I don't think that's addressing the conditions that we're living with now. And if they're in a forthright fashion, one that is a little uncomfortable,
that's not going to resolve
the conditions that we're dealing with now.
There is something there, though, too, Noah, with respect to the words that Trump used on that day. I'm separating this from his lethargy in responding to when the violence unfolded. But the words he used in the day, go over to the Capitol, we're going to cheer the people that support us, and we're going to not cheer the people that don't, and we're going to peacefully, and he used that word peacefully, represent ourselves. On the one hand, you have a lot of people that have said, you know, President Trump needs to be held accountable for the words he uses over the last 4 years when he, you know, speaks off the cuff and he speaks imprecisely and he speaks ham-handedly. And on the other hand, he doesn't get held accountable for the words he actually used in that speech that supposedly incited a mob.
Yeah, and I have little sympathy for that argument, and I'll tell you why. And I'll use the Georgia example, for example, because people will say, you know what, the Georgia Senate races weren't lost because of him. He literally told people to go vote. Yeah, he did, in a perfunctory fashion, once after spending 2 months saying that the people you were supposed to go for had cheated him out of an election and that you need to take some sort of revenge. Now, guess what? It turns out that maybe 10-15% of reliable Republican voters, particularly in very conservative districts like Marjorie Taylor Greene, didn't turn out, cost Republicans the Senate. Yeah, Trump told them to go vote. But a small portion of those people also heard the context within those remarks were made and drew the conclusions that any person with the commonality of the English language would understand. They didn't have to overcome this kind of the doubt that he was sowing subconsciously and consciously in his voters. So, no. I don't think that's a compelling rationale. No. I think everybody understood what he was saying, even though literally once in a while he gave himself a little out that he could point to. But the totality of his remarks pointed in one direction and one direction only.
That starts from a premise that I find troublesome, which is that, you know, 70 million people or 3 million people, 5 million people in Georgia are just mindless automatons, and they go in whichever direction Trump is saying you should go or hinting you should go. And I just don't think that's the case, even 10-15% of them. I mean, you know, that same 10-15% could have come to that conclusion themselves. We had a lot of callers on this show after the election that basically said, I'm never voting again. It had nothing to do with Georgia or any pronouncement by Trump on Georgia. You had Lynn Wood losing his mind down there, but clearly having an audience, Sidney Powell sort of aiding and abetting him. I mean, it's hard to, all this stuff is visited upon Trump's doors. And I'm not like, this is not some knee-jerk defense. I just don't think that the narrative really captures all the variables. And I think it starts from faulty premises, like everybody is sitting waiting for, you know, the high sign explicitly or implicitly from Trump in terms of what they're going to do or not do in a particular election or on a particular day at a particular rally.
I mean, it's an unfalsifiable premise, sure. Nevertheless, I do think it's kind of difficult to imagine that which happening in the absence of Donald Trump saying that everybody in from the Republican governor to the Republican secretary of state is aligned against you in a cabal conspiring against your interests to undermine an election that's going to be invalid anyway. But please go vote.
Well, but I think Loeffler,
the notion that is just ignored by these voters, it strikes me as suspect too.
I really think Loeffler and Perdue lost because of insider trading and the fact that the Democrats were campaigning going door to door. This is what I heard from somebody who lives in Georgia. And they're saying, if you vote for these two Democratic Senate candidates, you're going to get $2,000. Doesn't that sound good? So go and vote.
Well, and nevertheless, though, a Republican candidate said won statewide by 42,000 votes. I mean, he still managed to make to a convincing statewide election victory, suggesting that these people crossed over, or at least that a lot of these voters who were unwilling to cast ballot for the Senate race turned out. So you did have at least a fair amount of Republican voters who didn't turn out for the Senate that turned out anyway for a Republican statewide, which suggests a Republican can win statewide even with that electorate.
I want to move past Georgia, and since we're so focused on Trump and the left was so focused on Trump for 4 years, they wanted him to go, and now they don't want him to go. They want him to face a Senate impeachment trial, of course. Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton agree that there should be some sort of 9/11 style commission to reinvestigate the reinvestigation of the reinvestigation of the Russian collusion allegations. They want to keep him around just as long as they can.
Well, that's insane. I can't imagine that there's a single detail about the the past 4 years involving Russia that we don't know. I do think there's room for a bipartisan blue ribbon commission, what have you, to investigate the events of the 6th. There are just far too many details that are blurry and who is where, and we don't know a lot of this information. And what we're getting from press reports is really kind of damning and needs to be definitively proven. I don't think that the press reports are sufficient in that regard. And we know now that there's a tendency in this political culture now to indulge conspiratorial thinking, and we can't allow that to fester. Nevertheless, it's pretty clear that the Trump administration ends, but the Trump presidency does not, if only insofar as the fact that we get a Senate trial involving impeachment. So the president will be a part of our political culture even after he's out of office. And I don't think that's in anybody really has a problem with that. Democrats have a political incentive, even if they genuinely want to move on from this moment, have a political imperative to tether Republican lawmakers to Trump for as long as they can. Just look at his poll numbers. He's unpopular. So they have to tie him to them. Republicans don't have an incentive to get rid of Trump because Trump motivates their base, animates their base. He's the most important, most popular, rather, figure in the Republican Party. The media is not going to let go of him because he's a ratings bonanza. And Trump himself doesn't want to go anywhere. So Trump isn't going anywhere.
All right. So he'll get a second term in shadow format. He'll be around for at least another 4 years. Noah Rothman, associate editor for Commentary Magazine, author of Unjust, Social Justice and the Unmaking of America. Noah, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Mike Manapkin runs the Democratic House floor for 30-plus years running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois. You can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay, no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when. You're moving out. I said, when you're moving out.
Little pitchy there. You haven't been singing in a while, huh?
Literally moving out.
Yes.
U-Haul's annual survey of which way one-way rentals are going.
And which way are they going, Dan?
Number one for the most one-way U-Haul arrivals versus departures for the first time ever. Rocky Top, Tennessee for the first time. Yeah, Tennessee. Texas right behind, and then Florida number three.
I would think Florida would be number one.
Not in 2020. It was in 2019.
Okay.
One way out. I've got some good news for you, Illinois. Actually, it could be bad news, depending on your perspective.
What number are we, Dan?
Number one in U-Haul one ways out of state, California.
Oh.
Illinois shot up to 49th in the country. We're coming for you, New Jersey.
Well, it makes me mad, though, because a lot of those Californians are moving to Arizona, hence them turning blue.
Yeah.
Which I don't like. Why would they take their bad policies with them to another state?
For more on the lost Illinoisans that are scattered across the fruited plains, we're pleased to be joined by Ted Dabrowski, president at Wirepoints.com for our recurring segment on all things Illinois related. Ted, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Are you buoyed by the fact that we have shot past California and we're on the nipping at the heels of New Jersey in terms of out-migration?
Well, yeah, you know, this, we're looking for any positive sign we can, and you know, we don't like it when we lose our number one position, but we've lost it here. You know, I think this is just a confirmation of everything we've said, and you know, we've got, you know, a new General Assembly in Illinois, and the pastors have ignored this kind of data. They ignore all kinds of data about where we rank on people leaving, on taxes, and things like that. And so, you know, you'd like to think that this new leadership will look at that and say, "Uh-oh, it's time we do something about it," but it's unlikely.
talking about some COVID-related matters with the reopening of parts of the state and parts of the business community and parts of the state. You penned a piece at WirePoints about expediting the reopening and, oh, by the way, saving more Illinoisans in terms of their lives by changing the way vaccines are prioritized in the state.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot about how, at WirePoints, how the state has just dramatically failed to take care of the elderly. You know, we've seen, you know, 50% of all deaths have come for people 60 and older. We've got the retirement home fiasco where half of all COVID deaths have been in retirement homes. And I'm sorry, almost 90% of all deaths have been 60 and older. So we've known the problem has been the elderly, and that's who we've needed to take care of, and we've done a horrible job of protecting them. So here we come around to getting a vaccine finally, and right, and you would think that with all that data that Governor Pritzker and his team has, you would think that the number one thing they would do is obsess to get the vaccines to the elderly, right? That their case fatality rates are really high for when they're, you know, 80 and older or 70 and older. But what we're seeing is that they're botching that too. Just yesterday or this week, it was announced that you know, a whole bunch of essential workers will be teamed up to get their vaccines at the same time as the elderly, and now prisoners too. And so, you know, you're going to crowd out the elderly, we're going to have the same fiasco again, same mistake.
Well, why, if you committed a crime, even a homicide, will you get vaccinated before a law-abiding citizen? I mean, that makes no sense, because COVID, as we know, has gone through, you know, at least 26 in Cal, it's gone through there twice, and now, you know, the numbers are really low. So why bother?
Well, it's not surprising that if you look at the IDPH website, what they're calling the vaccination process is called equity-centric vaccination approach, in quotes. And you know, and that's the problem, is that we're moving away from the data once again, moving away from what makes sense, and to something called equity, which is much harder to define. And so Governor Pritzker got lots of pressure to move prisoners up into the same priority list as the elderly with comorbidities. And he buckled that pressure. You know, argument should be, it doesn't matter if you're a prisoner or you're a teacher or whoever you are, if you're elderly, you get the vaccine. If you have, you know, heavy comorbidities, get the vaccine. But otherwise, it's the elderly who should be the priorities, and everybody else should wait.
Yeah, that's right. That is the greatest disparity in terms of the virus's impact is age. So you separate everything else out, and it's age, age, age. We all know it, but politics trumps common sense in some states like Illinois when it comes to the prioritization of for vaccination. Something else, too, we were discussing a bit earlier in the program, the standards that the governor and Mayor Lightfoot have set for reopening, that they're sort of massaging, working around to try to get some places, some businesses reopened faster than their own thresholds would otherwise allow. And I haven't really heard a compelling reason, given where we are nationally, and they would always point to where we were nationally, with the incoming CDC director saying over the weekend that it's going to get worse in the coming weeks. We have some dark weeks ahead, is what Dr. Rochelle Walensky said. So it's worse than it was when we were in total lockdown, and it's supposed to get worse yet, according to Biden's incoming CDC director. And yet these knuckleheads, Pritzker and Lightfoot, are end-running their own standards.
Well, yeah, that's been a consistent thing all along. And let me make one more point, Dan, about the equity before. If Governor Pritzker really wants equity, then he'll do the elderly, because blacks and minorities are, you know, that's where their overwhelming deaths are. It's the elderly. So they should focus on that. So, you know, he can actually meet his equity requirements just by following the data and taking care of the elderly. To your other point, yeah, I mean, we've been so inconsistent all along. And, you know, at WirePoints, we've looked at, you know, a lot of the stuff that happens across different states. And what we've gleaned from all this is that policies, it's hard to figure out what policies make any sense, right? We had a massive peak early in March, April in Illinois. Then we had really low numbers. Then we had another massive peak. You know, and other states have had the exact opposite of what we've had. And it's really hard to make any sense of, which is why, you know, I'm fascinated but wish it would happen, is that the legislature should strip Governor Pritzker of his powers just to you know, have executive orders all the time. It's 10 months straight of executive orders. There's no rhyme or reason in what's happened in Illinois based on his policies, other than what we know is that it's destroyed businesses. It's kept the schools closed, and it's time to end these games, right, so that they don't even have to run around their own rules.
I mean, but do you think they needed the revenues from casinos? Because all of a sudden, no, you can't eat in a restaurant or a bar, but you can go into a casino and smoke and hang out and order drinks.
You know, there's so many rules that are broken everywhere, and you know, I there's restaurants open all around me. It's funny. Some towns won't reopen. Others will. You've got, of course, the same hypocrisies we've had with big box stores open. Others not. Nothing makes sense. But I think what it does say is that over time, especially as these vaccinations come on, we've got to start relaxing all these rules. Otherwise, you know, we'll continue to have the chaos. So, and, you know, and we need to bring up, Dan, the potential bailout that's coming from the federal government, because if we get more money, that'll allow Pritzker to keep everything closed longer because the state's bailed out.
I just look for this, you and the crack staff at Wirepoints, because I'm sure we'll have an Illinois politician do the same thing. Former New York State Party Democratic leader John Sullivan, who worked as an upstate coordinator for Cuomo's 2014 reelection campaign, received the first dose of the coronavirus vaccine in Florida.
Oh.
He went to Florida. I saw that when I was in Florida, a lot of vaccine tourism. Florida, he admitted, did this former New York State Democratic Party leader, he probably wouldn't have gotten it by now in New York. He's 73 years old, so he's a priority. But he went to Florida to get it. Just wait till some of our septuagenarian and octogenarian politicians wind up getting the vaccine in a neighboring state. So you want to track their movements.
Yeah, that's interesting, right? And it probably has already happened. You know, I told the story yesterday. I called around to see my mom. She's an 81-year-old cancer survivor, you know, relatively healthy. And you know, I called the hospitals, the doctor's office. There's no plan for the elderly that I can find. I have a friend whose mother's 92 in a retirement home. She won't be vaccinated until next month. It's just hard to understand where the priorities are and what's happening.
And then you ask, too, have you know, thrown away any doses? And nobody knows. Just a few. It's like, Dr. Nzinke, if you don't know, just say you don't know. But I know that there are plenty of doctors and nurses that don't want to take the vaccine that have passed, but the shelf life on those don't last forever.
Well, that's right. And, you know, the Wall Street Journal reported in New York in particular about them, you know, having doses being thrown away. And you know, what was interesting about my phone call to the hospital yesterday is that they said, well, you know, I don't know about your mother, but we haven't finished inoculating our staff at the hospital. So even that is a scary statement, because then we don't know what the heck happens with vials, with the doses that have been, you know, are they sitting on shelves, and are we keeping people waiting who are the most at risk?
I wanted you to preview the General Assembly's upcoming session. You mentioned the feds and the prospect of the $250 billion in Biden's COVID relief plan for states and localities and what percentage that Illinois will get. What about the prospect with the Dem Socialist supermajorities in both chamber and Pritzker in the governor's mansion? No toilets. What about the prospect that we see a tax increase across the board on the state's flat income tax, since they couldn't get a graduated tax through in November?
Well, you know, it's a really tough one politically for them and for the Democrats and Pritzker. You know, they had probably what I would say is the easiest tax hike to ever pass when we had the referendum last year. You know, 97% of Illinoisans could vote against the richest 3%, and yet Pritzker and his $50-something million couldn't get that passed. And so now this legislature has to consider, wow, now all those people rejected taxing the top 3%. Now we're going to tax all of them. It's a hard lift politically, but, you know, when you start looking at the numbers, it's all going to depend on what the federal government gives Illinois. And so you can bet that this General Assembly will stay away from that tax hike until they find out what President Biden and Congress might give. Biden wants to give $350 billion to all states and local governments. Illinois' take would be, based on population, some $14 billion. That's certainly enough to stave off a tax hike for now. It doesn't solve any problems. It just allows Pritzker in this legislature to avoid the tax hike now, you know,
well, then
playing the game.
Then it pushes it off for 2 years because he's not going to do it in a reelection year.
That's right. And so we'll just, you know, just do all the gimmicks that are possible. You'll probably sell the Thompson Center one more time.
Right.
I think it's the fifth time we'll sell it. It's bringing lots of money. We should just sell more of those things.
If you just sell a lot of stuff on paper, it's amazing the amount of revenue you generate on paper.
Exactly. But so look for them not to do anything until they get their clear signal from Joe Biden. And you got people like Janet Yellen at the Fed now who's saying, give away, go ahead, give away money. Let's do this. So it's a tough time for reform, and it's a tough time for getting any kind of fiscal discipline, because if the Feds do hand out more money, it's going to make the next 2 years just more of the same, and make it easier for the supermajorities in Illinois to just kind of patch things up for a while.
Ted Dabrowski, president of WirePoints.com. Ted, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Should have been a cowboy. I should have learned to rope and ride. I'd be wearing my six shoe, riding my pony on a cattle drive.
Hello, Toby Keith.
Yeehaw. I didn't know you had it in you. I didn't just know. Like the country music, Dan.
Texas is a good choice. Clearly, it's a good choice. Number two on the move-in list, right behind Tennessee this year, according to U-Haul. And state representative down there named James White, he's in East Texas. Now, I know West Texas is Friday Night Lights, Odessa.
Yeah, I know. I used to live in El Paso.
What's East Texas?
East Texas is Texarkana. I don't know. East Texas.
Well, we're going to find out. Representative James White is state representative. District 9 in the state of Texas, chairman of the Texas House Corrections Committee. Maybe East Texas is known for kicking ass.
Yeah.
Representative names. White, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much, and thank y'all for thinking about me and having me join you this morning.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. So you penned this piece over at thefederalist.com explaining why you support the rights of lawmakers to bear arms on the job, and I got to tell you, I could probably go along with that for Texas legislators. Now, in Illinois, in the Chicagoland area, picturing these Barney Fife legislators we have roaming around the Capitol with guns, I don't know if that would work out so well.
Well, thank you so much for that, and we're extremely proud to represent five great counties in East Texas, Polk, Tyler, Jasper, Newton, and Hardin counties, And we would just say, as long as those colleagues of mine in Illinois are law-abiding citizens, we think they should obviously exercise their right. It's a right that they already have. They should exercise their right and extend that right to their citizens as well.
Hey, I know you're Texas polite, but I got to tell you, you don't want to claim these legislators up here as your colleagues. You don't want that stink on you. So, be careful how you're throwing that term colleague around.
Okay.
So you actually picked up this issue, this newly elected Colorado congresswoman named Lauren Boebert carrying her weapon on the grounds of the Capitol. And she was criticized. Actually, she's gotten more than criticism. There have been some suggestions by Democrat socialist members of the House that she was, in on the planning to assault the Capitol because she did a tour of the Capitol with some constituents the day before the violence occurred. So your defense of Representative Boebert and articulating a little bit more beyond just constitutional rights, why this would be important for lawmakers to be seen as exercising their right to bear arms.
Yes, and actually, reading and listening to some of the comments of one of her Democratic colleagues sort of smacks as sexism, because his point was he seems to have been lecturing this young woman who seems a very accomplished American. I mean, she's a business owner. She's a mother. She's a wife. I'm just wondering, what type of sexism is that when you have a male colleague actually telling you how to exercise your rights and how to, you know, provide your own security for you and your family.
Yeah, so that sounds like mansplaining to me.
Yeah. What about that, right? But look, I just think we're in a very perilous time, okay? We're a perilous time for all of our rights, our First Amendment freedom of religious rights. We're in perilous time, obviously, for our freedom of speech rights. Oh, yeah. And we're in a perilous time when it comes to our Second Amendment rights. And I think it has to be more than just passing laws and say you're fighting for it. As legislators, especially state legislators, we're going to actually have to start exercising these rights to affirm that these are rights that we already have. They've been granted to us. No, they haven't been granted to us. These are basic human rights granted to us by our Creator. And the best thing that government can do is protect these rights. So we got to step up and do more and exercise and let people know that we're actually exercising these rights, not just up here just making rhetorical arguments.
Now, James White, I know you're in the state house in Texas, but when you saw what unfolded on the Capitol January 6th, were you hoping that, you know, more of the congressmen and women lawmakers could have fought back and been able to carry on that particular day?
Well, you know, look, I would say to your answer, just a quick answer, they should be able to have all of the tools that we expect law-abiding people to have, that want to have, to protect themselves. But in the context of the Texas legislature, and I heard some of your chat about Texas before you brought me on. One thing to know about the Texas legislature: our law-abiding Texans that have a concealed handgun license, a concealed license, they don't even have to go through the, you know, sort of like the body scan. They don't have to take their bags through any type of heightened checkpoint when they come to the Capitol. All they do is they flash their license, and we know that that is a law-abiding Texan that has underwent a very rigorous background check to get that concealed license, and they just come straight through. I am very confident and proud that when constituents come to my office, when they come to the state capitol and sit in the gallery, they're probably packing. Okay, so you know, this is something we've been doing long before any of these incidents that have happened over the past few days.
There's some legislation that's already circulating with within the House that would provide for licensing of firearm and ammunition possession, the registration of firearms, prohibit the possession of certain ammo. Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, she's from Texas. I know that's not something you're probably celebrating. She wants you to have to register your firearms by a federal license to buy or possess firearms or ammunition. Federal license. How do you think that would fly at the legislative level in Texas?
It wouldn't fly at all. It would be a, I guess, what we call a streamer. That would go down big. But this is so sad. This is so sad that our elected officials, with all of the problems that we have in our country, is more regulations and bureaucracy for law-abiding Texans, law-abiding Americans. We need to be focusing on things that matter, like digging this economy out of the ditch. Before this Chinese virus came to our shores, my friends, we had one of the strongest economies, one of the strongest, maybe not the strongest in history, I don't know, but definitely one of the most strongest economies in our nation's history and throughout the world. We were ushering in an era of peace by bringing our troops home from fighting endless wars for years and years and years. And it seems like the only thing that we can focus on is how we can make life more bureaucratic and more burdensome and more unconstitutional for the people that really matter, and that's law-abiding Americans.
In New York State, a state legislator has introduced legislation to ban the private ownership of bulletproof vests. When you hear about legislation like that, what do you think? What do you think that New York State legislator and his supporters are trying to do?
Well, that's just asinine. What is the goal of you know, prohibiting the purchase of bulletproof vests? These things are just asinine. They will have no impact on crime. They will have no impact on public safety. This is just more leftism virtue signaling with these pieces of legislation. But we need to watch out. I mean, you know, because when a bill is filed, that means it has a chance to pass. So you can't just say, oh, it's just crazy. It'll never pass. Well, it's out there. And in the places that these pieces of legislation are being passed and the senior legislators that are passing this legislation, you've got to watch it and we've got to defeat it.
I wanted to just get you to offer perspective on the political culture in Texas, because I think it's so interesting. You know, when you're in a state like Illinois, where we live, you lose sight of the fact that not everybody lives like this. We have a professional political class here, right? We, I think, like the second highest paid legislators. You vest for a pension after 8 years, so on and so forth.
You get double pensions if you're.
And in Texas, the legislature meets once every 2 years. You pass 2 year budgets. You basically a stipend. Everybody has to have a real job because you can't live on what you make as a legislator. Just speak to that culture down there.
Okay. Well, and let me be totally honest about it. It's one of the greatest deliberative bodies in the world, and I'm just honored to serve in this capacity. By constitutional mandate, we're only paid $600 a month throughout our term. We meet 140 days every other year on an odd number year. The governor can call us back for special sessions, but he must call us back for a specific agenda. So, you know, we just can't just come in and just go wild. Okay. We can only, we can send him anything, but the only legislation that he is even constitutionally subjected to consider for passage is what's on his, what we call the special call. Now, when we're in session, we are provided a daily per diem. Okay, I can't remember what it is. I don't know if it's 130 or 150 or that sort of thing. But to your point, you know, you just don't kind of remember a lot of this stuff because it's just $600 a month anyway, right? And we do have an opportunity to get vested after 8 years for a retirement program, but I'm told that the average tenure of a member of the legislature is about 4 to 5 years anyway. So not very many of us, you know, throughout history have reached that 8-year
right.
mark.
No incentive.
Putting that aside, it's the idea, folks, that you come back home and you really have to live your life, run your business under the crazy laws that you have passed for everybody else.
And people wonder why so many people are moving to Texas. Isn't that interesting?
Not a surprise.
And just to confirm, because not everybody's been to Texas, just to confirm now, despite the fact you only meet once every 2 years, you only make $7,000 a year as a legislator, so forth, people rotate in 4 or 5 years, you don't have a state income tax. Despite all that, you do have schools. You do have police departments, fire departments.
Yes.
You do feature those things in Texas, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
We try to value local discretion and local control when it's constitutional. Okay. You know, a lot of people tend to think local control is sacrosanct, but it's not. It still has to be constitutional and responsible to the people of Texas. But yes, we have police departments, we have fire departments, we have city governments, we have all of that. But most importantly, we have Texans that are living under the auspices of individual freedom. You don't need government every day 24/7 of your life, running every aspect of your life to have a prosperous and free environment.
Representative James White, State Rep, Texas House District 9, Chairman of the Texas House Corrections Committee as well. Representative White, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. God bless.
God bless to you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Dan and Amy, and note a personal privilege here, a giant in the pro-life movement, really a pro-life hero, Joe Scheidler, passed away yesterday. He was the founder of the Pro-Life Action League here in Chicago, based in Chicago. And he actually, and, you know, talk about the Almighty's timing, he began his activism, his life of activism, marching with Martin Luther King from Selma to Montgomery in 1965. And took that spirit of activism in support of defense of unborn life, the sanctity of human life from conception to natural death. And he was 93 years old. He fought. I mean, I had the chance to interact with him a few times over the years. Just a great gentleman, great family, and an inspiration for anybody who believes in the sanctity of human life and protecting unborn life. Joe Scheidler passed away at the age of 93 yesterday.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, who will represent Trump in impeachment 2.0, the Senate trial? Will there be any additional consideration for not going forward with the trial? Who, I mean, should Trump put on any defense? Jonathan Turley from George Washington Law, George Washington University Law, suggests that perhaps the best defense is no defense. Don't
really
confer it any legitimacy.
Huh, that's an option. Thank God Rudy Giuliani has removed himself. Over the weekend, he was, you know, on ABC News saying, I'm going to make sure the president testifies in his own defense. Well, he's not going to be able to represent him because he was also at that rally and spoke at the rally so he could be used as a witness. So you can't do both.
Yeah, I don't think Rudy is the right play there for counsel. Alan Dershowitz, spoke with Alan Dershowitz on Friday. He didn't say no, but he also said he hasn't been asked. So we'll see. For more on all this, some of these unanswered questions, we're pleased to be joined again by Kurt Mills, senior reporter at the American Conservative. Kurt, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning.
One of the interesting things I saw the other day was Karl Rove suggesting that if Trump's defense in any way invokes the notion that the election was stolen or there was systemic fraud, that that is one way that he can push a number of Senate Republicans who may not be ready to vote to convict to vote to convict.
I think this is obviously a fast running thing. We are 48 hours more or less from President, Biden. And whether or not this trial is going to go through, whether Biden is going to want to say, hey, let's put this to the side. Hey, let's make it a sideshow, or even if the Supreme Court would confirm legitimacy to any potential conviction, not that any conviction is assured. These are all open questions. Beyond that, I really don't know what more insight I can lend. I would say that it appears now that they are short of the 68 votes, that is 50 Democrats plus 18 Republicans crossing borders and voting for the other side. But other than that, it's just a mess for Donald Trump and obviously for the country.
Well, do you think that, I was having a hard time hearing you. Do you think Nancy Pelosi will deliver the articles of impeachment hours after the inauguration tomorrow?
Yes, that appears likely. I'm sorry if you can't hear me quite perfectly.
One of the issues, as some have argued, including Dershowitz, a former appellate court judge, Michael Luttig, saying that you cannot impeach a president after he has left office, that the trial itself is unconstitutional. And will there be any effort to pursue legal channels to get a court to weigh in to that effect?
Just to answer your question a little further, I would say that Biden is the key here. If Biden says that he thinks that this is not the right use of political capital, that's going to have a chilling effect on any Republican crossovers or even the Democratic leadership pursuing this. As to the legal questions, it's literally unprecedented. This is not something that I like to use in my writing because generally that there's a precedent for something. This has never happened. Ludwig and other conservatives say it's no go, but others make the case that it is, and it would have to be up to the Supreme Court.
And then there's the prospect of Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley. I mean, the idea that the Senate would undertake to expel them from the Senate under the 14th Amendment, Section 3, for aiding and abetting a seditious act, an insurrection, because they objected to the electoral certification. I mean, does that have any legs at all, or is that just essentially a talking point for guys like Joe Manchin when he makes the rounds on TV?
Well, you know, guys like Joe Manchin are, in theory, the most conservative members of the Democratic Party, so it's not exactly great news for Senator Cruz and Hawley that even someone like Manchin is close to supporting an action, you know, so considerable. On the other hand, though, I think it would set an enormously potentially reckless precedent, and I think we're still, you know, I think there's still going to be more video footage coming out of this, and Hawley and Cruz as people will try to spin this as, you know, obviously this is not an insurrection. They'll make the argument. I think it's pretty borderline between an insurrection and a riot, but that's semantic. I don't expect Senators Hawley and Cruz to be forced from the upper chamber when all things are said and done.
And tell us what role FBI, former FBI Director James Comey is playing in this, because he's urging Biden to pardon Trump.
Yes, but
that's stupid.
Well, it's very difficult because it's like, you know, it's just a pardon effect. It's a legal semantics here, right? Like, if Trump is pardoned of all federal crimes, like, there's an impeachment trial and all, avoid, probably because of the constitutional concept of double jeopardy. But it doesn't save Trump from indictment at the state level. Trump and his family's businesses are under investigation by the District of Columbia and the state of New York, both of whom, especially D.C. after last week, were very, very much licking their chops to indict. But yes, Comey is kind of from this old school, as is Biden, of the sort of bipartisan reach across the aisle, good of the nation sort of thing. Biden's the president. It's not without some legitimacy.
He is Kurt Mills, senior reporter at the American Conservative. Kurt, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. God bless.
Thanks.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, have you been paying attention to what's happening in your kids' schools in the wake of January 6th and the transfer of power that happens tomorrow?
I wish we had school. No, I haven't noticed any difference because they didn't talk about it.
Yeah. Peter Groom is the principal at Fenwick High School. Fenwick High School.
Yeah.
Oh.
Where Pat Quinn went.
One of the great Catholic schools.
Oh, yeah.
Allegedly. Maybe once upon a time. Mm-hmm. Here's his message. The attack on the Capitol building on the surface can be seen as an incident that was inflamed by a demagogue trying to preserve power. Unfortunately, this view is far too obtuse. The images of Confederate flags and hangman's nooses were a stark reminder behind what motivates certain people. There are underlying issues that our country must face going forward. While I'm proud of how our students demonstrated maturity and understanding, I know that we at Fenwick are not immune to some of the changes that must occur. And then he makes the run-up to Nazi Germany, Third Reich comparison.
Oh, God.
As the 20s and 30s unfolded, we saw the dangers of the democratic experiment in countries like Italy and Germany as populist fascist movements rose to power and they manipulated the small-d democratic systems to become dictatorships. Never did I think that our own government was as vulnerable as we demonstrated this week. does not matter if you're conservative or liberal. The continued hate speech and division pollutes great people on all sides of our political spectrum. Yeah, Principal Bloom, you're contributing to it. And you're contributing to it because I know from talking to some Fenwick parents that this is your first missive on the topic of political violence. Didn't feel compelled to offer any thoughts on what transpired for months on end last year in America's cities, including Chicago, obviously, and persist right into this year. No comment there.
No comment when 52 Chicago police officers were attacked outside the Columbus statue. No comment at all? During the two, we had two huge looting incidents and riots in Chicago.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. There's a question on the floor. Are you paying attention to what's happening at your kids' schools? There is this, going back to the government schools, that was adopted and repurposed at least by District 87, the Glenbard School District, Glen Ellen. DuPage County. How did we lose DuPage County?
Once a Republican bash.
A resource developed by Alyssa Hadley Dunn, Associate Professor of Teacher Education at Michigan State. You know where this is going. It's a practicum for teaching about what happened on January 6th. All you have to do to understand the nature of the lesson plan is take notice of these notes in her framework for teachers. Note to black teachers. I hope you have the time and space to care for yourselves as you support your students. I hope that you have white colleagues who are talking about this too, so you don't have to be the only one. I hope that you can find co-conspirators in your school or here. Note to white teachers of white students, you have to talk about what is happening. This is on us every time and all the time. We cannot pretend to be surprised anymore. We have to do what we said we were going to do all summer when we were reading those anti-racist books, perfect segue, and completing those anti-racism checklists. And by anti-racism, she means racist. Our white students are not, quote unquote, too young to learn about this. Note to white teachers of students of color, especially black students. You know, got to categorize everything by the color of the teacher and the student. Please make sure you know what you're doing before you do it, you white teachers who are teaching students of color, especially black students. Please make sure you know how to support your black students and other students of color if you try to have these conversations. Make sure you do not do more harm by entering these conversations without careful thought and planning. How patronizing. This is why our friend Bob Woodson of the Woodson Center says, you know what? I would rather deal with an honest bigot than one of these self-righteous, self-indulgent, patronizing white leftists like this goofy professor from Michigan State and whatever dipsticks over at District 87 that thought this was a good idea to circulate, or Principal Groom up at Fenwick. Dare I even go to our favorite district, 65, Skokie and Evanston? We talked about last week with their, if you want to send kids back to school, you're a white supremacist argument. And we don't care if you're also a pediatrician, mom or dad.
If you care about their mental health, you're exhibiting white privilege.
D65 Equity Weeks, Black Lives Matter Week, first graders. There are lesson plans, Black Lives Matter Week from pre-K through eighth grade. Here's just one example for first graders. Day one, what is Black Lives Matter Week? Day two, for first graders, restorative justice, empathy, and loving engagement. Day three, diversity and globalism. Day four, queer, trans-affirming, and collective value. Day five, intergenerational black families and black villages. Day six, black women unapologetically black. And
I thought you were just supposed to learn about primary colors.
This is
preschool and kindergarten
prepping.
That is sickening.
Grammar school kids for a life of being a mindless, ill-educated leftist activist.
Oh, brainwashing. Yeah, I'd yank my kids so fast from that class. Are you kidding me?
Danny on the Kennedy.
Restorative justice. I don't even know what that means. Hey, Danny.
Start apologizing in first grade. Hey, Danny, here on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. Fenwick Fryer here from back in the 70s. I'd have to take off my shoes to count the cousins and brothers and uncles who went there, and this is really embarrassing. We were out, my brother and I, at the rally, and we saw one Confederate flag, one idiot carrying that flag, and we said, this is the one that's going to make the news, and this is the one that everyone's going to talk about. And like you guys said, it is really a shame that they don't focus on all the damage and destruction that was done in this city over the summer, that they just, you know, cherry-pick something and then pile on. And that's all I got to say, but it's really embarrassing.
Thanks.
As a Fryer.
Thanks, Danny. Mike in Plainfield.
Hey, my wife's a teacher out in Romeoville, and the day after January 6th, like, the agenda went out from her district on talking points on how she wants, they want their third grade students to know the difference between the way Biden talks and Trump talks, and what a hateful person one president is and what a kind, loving person the other one is. And it was an email blast to every single teacher in the district on how to try to teach the kids moving forward.
Thanks,
it's
for the
disgusting.
Thanks for the call, Mike.
Thanks for the information.
Pay attention. Pay attention. At minimum, I mean, I know you're taking interest in your child's lives. Pay attention to what's happening. Share the information, and we'll share it too.
Thanks so much for making us part of your morning. Thanks to Justin Kosick and Quinn McCarthy. And we want to give Melania the last word here as we say goodbye. Wonderful 4 years. Such poise, such grace.
No words can express the depth of my gratitude for the privilege of having served as your First Lady. To all the people of this country, you will be in my heart forever. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless the United States of America.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.